Exodus chapter 3. Now Moses, verse 1, kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. He led the flock to the backside of the desert, and he came to the mountain of God, even to Horeb, or Sinai. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, but the bush was not consumed. And Moses said, verse 3, I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt. And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called unto him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, Here I am. And the Lord said, Draw not nigh hither. Put off thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place whereon thou standest is holy ground. Wow. Apart from Jesus, without a doubt, the greatest leader in world history must be that most remarkable man, Moses. Other than Jesus, he would have to be the greatest leader in world history. Moses, you see, what a challenge he had before him. He was the one who led a congregation of 3 million people for 40 years across the desert from Egypt to the borders of the promised land. And that was not an easy task. For that congregation, they were not always happy campers, believe you me. And as we go through Exodus, we're going to see that they weren't always a pleasant group of people to be pastoring over, unlike the Applegate Fellowship. He had a task, and he did it successfully. He did it remarkably. He led that congregation. He lived to be 120 years of age. And when he died, we are told, his eye wasn't dimmed. That is, when he died at 120, he didn't have trifocals. Or even bifocals. Or even contact lenses. He could see clearly. And it says his strength was not abated, which meant that he was as strong as he was when he was a young man many years previously. He had his vitality. He had his strength, you see. Even at the age of 120, when he finally was taken on up into eternity. Now Moses' life, for you Bible students, can be divided into 3 40-year segments. He lived to be 120, and you can divide his life into thirds. The first 40 years, from the time that he was born until he was 40 years of age, he was becoming a somebody. He was becoming a somebody. That is, most of you know the story, he was adopted by Pharaoh, Ramses II. He was brought up in the household of Pharaoh, and he was in line to become the next Pharaoh of the Egyptian Empire. And he was a man that was educated in the palace of Pharaoh. And we are told by Stephen, I'll read to you from Stephen's sermon, Stephen's commentary on the life of Moses, where Stephen says in Acts chapter 7, verse 25, Moses was learned in all the wisdom of Egypt. He was mighty in words and in deeds. He knew all about Egyptian education and philosophies and scientific discoveries. He had all the knowledge of Egypt. And he was mighty indeed. The phrase mighty indeed implies that he was a warrior. He was a military hero. So the guy was educated and heroic, mighty in words and mighty in deeds. For those first 40 years, he was becoming a somebody. The next 40 years, from 40 to 80, he was becoming a nobody. For you see, at the age of 40, Moses saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his Jewish brethren. And Moses went and he killed the Egyptian. He murdered him. And then, after he killed that Egyptian, he went into exile. He ran away, fearing for his life. And he spent the next 40 years on the backside of the desert. He was watching his father-in-law's sheep. And you might recall what Genesis 46 said. We looked at that some weeks ago. It says that to the Egyptians, every shepherd is an abomination. The worst thing you could do in the eyes of the Egyptians was to be a keeper of sheep. It would be like somebody who works in the sewer in our culture. It was an abomination. It was a terrible thing. It was something people thought really stunk to be a shepherd. So here's Moses. At one time, next in line to be the Pharaoh over the whole Egyptian empire. But now, for the next 40 years, he's an unknown on the backside of the desert, a shepherd, an abomination in the eyes of the Egyptians. That leads him to the final 40 years. After he went through 40 years of becoming a nobody, then, in our text that's before us, God reached out to him. And his final 40 years, you see, after he spent 40 years becoming a somebody and then 40 years becoming a nobody, now he can be a model for everybody. Because I have to understand that before the Lord can use me or use you, we have to be stripped of our own confidence, you see. Leaning not on our own abilities. We have to first be a nobody before we realize, oh Lord, you can use anybody. You can even use me. So that's the way to remember the life of Moses, very simply. First 40 years, becoming a somebody in the palace of Pharaoh. The next 40 years, becoming a nobody on the backside of the desert, watching his father-in-law Jethro's sheep. The final 40 years, he's a model for everybody. He now is called into his vocation, and he leads the Jewish nation on this journey towards the land of promise. Now, in chapter 3, Moses is entering that third phase where he can be a model for you, a model for me. I love this story, this little vignette, this idea that the Lord reaches out to Moses and speaks to Moses by utilizing a bush. I like this. Moses is there on the backside of the desert when he sees a bush that is on fire seemingly. It attracts his attention. He investigates. And the Lord used that bush to speak to Moses, to reach out for Moses, to bring Moses into the place of service and ministry. I like this for a couple of reasons. This story really grabs me, this idea of the Lord using a bush, because it shows me, number one, that the Lord can use me. If he used a bush, he can use me. And number two, that the Lord is with me. The Lord can use me. Number one, the Lord is with me. Number two, that's what I see in this wonderful vignette. This very simple but practical story of the Lord using a bush to call Moses into ministry. The idea here, number one, that the Lord can use me. I realize this when I see that day the Lord used a bush to speak to Moses, to grab a hold of Moses. Now, I would have thought the Lord would have used perhaps a strong oak tree. Yeah, Lord, that's what you need to use, an oak tree, strong and sturdy. Or a majestic pine tree, straight and princely. or a fragrant cedar tree. Yeah, that would make sense. A tree that smells sweet, Lord. A cedar tree, a pine tree, an oak tree. But the Lord didn't use any of those. He used a bush. A bush. And the word bush there in the Hebrew is sena, S-E-N-E-H. It means literally a thorny bush. It's not just a bush, it's a bush that's prickly, a bush that has thorns. Now, botanists tell us that thorns are basically aborted branches. Thorns basically are abortive branches. That is, they should have been branches, but they just didn't get that far. So they end up as being thorns. So here's this bush that's going to be used by God. Not a majestic pine tree, a strong oak tree, a fragrant cedar tree, but a bush. A bush like me. A thorny bush. A bush that's prickly. A bush that's common. That's nothing, you see. But that is what the Lord loves to do. Listen. The Lord loves to use bushes like me and like you. Why? I'll read to you from what Paul has to say in 1 Corinthians. You might want to jot it down if you're taking notes and read it later. Listen to what Paul says concerning those whom the Lord uses, the people he chooses to use. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 26. For ye see your calling, brethren, how that not many wise men after the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called, but God hath chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise. God hath chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty. And the base things of the world, the things which are despised, hath God chosen, that no flesh should glory in His presence. God chooses the bushes, those that are bush league, those that feel bushed, like you and me. Why? Because when He uses the bush, man, the glory goes to God. It doesn't go to the bush, to you, to me. We're not the stately, fragrant, strong, majestic trees. We're bush leaguers, man. I know what I am. And that's why the Lord chooses to use people like you and people like me. The Lord really can use me. Even though I feel bushed. Even though I feel like I'm a bush leaguer, really. Paganini was the great violinist of a generation ago. And Paganini did something that blew the minds of those that were in the concert hall at Vienna, Austria, during that concerto. Paganini went out onto the stage, held his violin in his hand, and then he did something which blew their minds. Holding the violin, he took a string and he broke the string right before the audience. He broke a second string and a third string. Only one string was left on that violin. He took that violin. He nestled it under his chin. He cradled it in his arm. He grabbed the bow. And for the next 18 minutes or so, he began to play masterfully on this violin with only one string. The crowd was dumbfounded, was amazed. And after 18 minutes or so, when he finished his piece playing on one string, he stood before the crowd who was in awe, who were dumbstruck. And he said, "One string and Paganini." And the crowd began to cheer and the crowd began to yell and the crowd began to applaud because they realized, wow, Paganini is a master. Look what he did with the one-string violin. You see, I might feel like, man, I only have one string. I might feel strung out. I might feel third string. But the reality is the Lord loves to use that which is weak or base or unimportant, unimpressive in the sight of people. For what reason? Because then the master musician, the master, our Lord and Savior, gets the glory. No flesh glories in His sight, you see. And I'll tell you this, you who feel prickly and you who feel like you're bushed and you who are bush leaguers and you who feel like failures, hey, you're prime candidates to be used by the Lord. He loves to use one-stringed violins to show His ability that He might receive the glory. Why? Is God a glory hound or something? How come He wants all the glory? How come He won't share His glory with me? What's the deal? He knows something. If He shares His glory with you, if people look up to you, lean on you, become impressed with you, you will ultimately disappoint them. If they're looking to you, leaning on you, trusting in you, you will ultimately disappoint them because we are all frail. We are all fickle. The Lord in His love says, I'm not going to share my glory with any flesh, with any man, because I know that men will always disappoint. Therefore, only I will receive the glory. Because I will never disappoint anyone who looks to me, who trusts in me, who leans on me. That is why I will not share my glory with any man. It's not because he's a glory hog. It's because he realizes that only he will be solid and see you and see me through day after year after decade on through eternity. So, God says, I'm looking for bushes. Bushes. One-stringed violins. Common folks, just like you, just like me. Interesting. I have this problem. I remember hearing a speech when I was a young guy by John F. Kennedy, his inaugural address. The words have become well known. The words that John F. Kennedy asked this country, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. And that resonated, and we would say, yeah, okay, that's right. And it became kind of a mantra. And we sort of transferred that into our thinking about serving the Lord. Ask not what God can do for you, ask what you can do for God. But you see, that's not really right. It's not what can I do for God, it's not what can I do for God? It is not what can I do for God. It is what can God do through me? Not what can I do for Him, but what can He do through me? Not I'm going to really get it together and be used mightily, but no, Lord, what do You want to do? What can You do? What do You desire to do through me? Do whatever You wish. And the Lord says, great. I'll use you, you bush. I'll use you that I might receive the glory. Yeah, the burning bush. I love this story because it shows a very important principle that God really can use bush people like me and bush people like you. Number two, not only that God can use me, but number two, the Lord is with me. The Lord is with me. You see, here is Moses on the backside of the desert, day after week after month after year. Decades go by, literally. And then something happens. There is a bush, a common bush, a bush. There's lots of bushes like that out in the wilderness. There's a bush, though. There's a bush that is burning. Seemingly, a bush that is bright, and it causes him to turn and think and study and investigate carefully. And it shows me something. It shows me that, yeah, Lord, even when I feel like I'm going through dry times, when I'm in the desert, Lord, You are here. Now listen, tonight in this amphitheater, people are divided into one of two groups. There are those that say, God is nowhere. Man, I'm in the desert. I've just been kind of hanging out with the sheep. God is nowhere. And there are others that take those same seven letters, but change the spacing. And they say, God is now here. The same letters, not God is nowhere, N-O space W-H-E-R-E, but God is now here, N-O-W space H-E-R-E. Write it down. You'll see how it works out. But there are two groups. Every one of us falls into one of those categories this evening. God is nowhere. Oh, man. Versus God is now here. What are you saying, John? Just this. God was there with Moses. God was there calling to Moses. God was there reaching out toward Moses. God was there when Moses was in the desert. Just like God is here with me. You see, I might wonder, well, where? Where? Things aren't always what they seem to be. We were in Israel last week, and we were there up at Nafginosar, up at the kibbutz by the Sea of Galilee. We were told by our guide, you know, the Sea of Galilee, which is in reality a freshwater lake, had been rather low. And so some of the water in that area around Tiberias, the major town there on the Sea of Galilee's shores, the water was kind of dubious, kind of problematic. So we were told to not drink the water from that area. Well, those things never bother me. I just don't worry about that kind of stuff. So every day as we would go out, I would fill up my water bottle with water from the tap. When we go out, man, you have to take a water bottle with you. It's hot out there. And so I'd fill up my water bottle. And Tammy, she would say, oh, John, honey, don't do that. You're going to get sick. Ah, no, don't worry. No problema, you know. And I would fill up my water bottle all the time with the tap water. Well, Tammy was real careful. She would go into the cafeteria of the kibbutz that we were staying at, Nafginosar. And she would go to the table where this pitcher of water was in the cafeteria, and she would carefully pour from that pitcher into her water bottle every day. Every time we went out, she would fill up her bottle from that pitcher. The last day we were there, she was doing just that, pouring the water into her water bottle from the pitcher, when a waitress ran up and said, no. And Tammy said, what? No, not that water. That's the water that we wash our hands in every day. So she was drinking what they washed their hands in every day. That's what she was drinking all day long. Things are not always what they seem to be. Things are not always the way you think they might be. Appearances can be deceiving, you see. What do you mean? God is here. Where? Where is He? Listen, things aren't always what they seem to be. The Lord is here in that bush that's sitting right next to you. What? That prickly person? That guy, my husband, that pokes me? Or my mom and dad that irritate me? What do you mean? Yes. Listen, God is here in the person that's sitting right next to you, in the person that you're married to, in the person that you're linked with, in the person that you work by. The people that know Him, listen, are filled with Him. Well, wait a minute, you say. So you're saying that my husband, this bush, that he's going to be the tool that the Lord's going to use to speak to me? Or to reach out toward me, or my mom, or my dad, or my son, or my daughter, or my brother here in the fellow. Come on now. How can that be? They're not on fire. Listen carefully. He's not on fire, you might say of your husband or your wife contemptuously. But here's what you need to see. The bush was not on fire. The fire was in the bush. Look at our text here. It says here in verse 2, that a flame of fire came out of the midst of the bush. The flame of fire was in the bush. It was not that the bush was on fire, it's that the flame was in the bush. The bush wasn't consumed. You might say, well, my husband, my mother, my dad, my boss, whoever it might be, they're not on fire. Listen, they may not be on fire, but if they're a believer, the fire is in them. Ah, they're a bush. Hey, things aren't always what they seem to be. The fire is in them. You see, this is where the problem is when I feel like, oh, God is nowhere. God doesn't speak to me. Yes, He's talking through the bush that's sitting right next to me. You see, Jesus, they didn't recognize Him. Why, in Matthew chapter 13, you might recall the story. He spoke and He taught and He was doing works. But then those around Him said, hey, we know Him. He's the son of the carpenter. Aren't His brothers with us and His sisters among us? We know Him. And they began to turn up their nose at Him because they thought that He was just the son of a carpenter. No. Wrong. He was not the son of a carpenter. He was born of a virgin. He was the son of God, the creator. But they thought, well, we know His family. We know Him. We've seen Him all these years growing up. And they didn't recognize Him for who He was. They thought He was just part of the carpenter family. Some people say, well, I know Him. He's just my brother, or that's just my mom, or that's just my father, or that's just my son or my daughter. No, they're more than that. They didn't recognize Him. They thought He was just family, just the son of a carpenter. Matthew chapter 13. And then in Mark's gospel, Mark chapter 6, there the boys are toiling away. The waves are mounting. The wind is howling. And their hearts are freaking out. And as they're fighting the storm, there in the middle of the night, they see coming in their direction someone walking on the water. And they cry, it's a ghost! And we're not talking Casper. You see, in those days, fishermen and sailors believed that right before you drowned and died, you would see a spirit coming toward you. They had this legend, this belief, that right before you went down and were done in, this spirit would come, the grim reaper, if you would, to get you. It's a ghost! They thought it was a ghost. And Jesus said, be of good cheer. It is I. Be not afraid. They thought He was a ghost. And there are people that will come your way that will perhaps freak you out a bit. And you'll think, that's spooky. That's frightening. That's haunting. But in reality, it's the fire in that person who's spooky, frightening, or haunting that is coming your way. It's Jesus coming your way that day. It's the Lord. They thought He was a carpenter's son in Matthew 13. They thought He was a ghost in Mark 6. Then in Luke, in Luke's gospel, chapter 24, you know the story. He had risen from the dead. And on that Easter Sunday morning, He was walking with a couple of disciples of His that didn't recognize Him. They didn't recognize Him. He's walking along with these guys as they're making their way to Emmaus that day. And He says to those boys, why are you guys so sad? And the boys said, what? Are you a stranger here? Don't you know what's been taking place? What's your trip? Are you a stranger here? They thought He was a stranger. They didn't understand the one that was walking on the road right next to them was the Lord. And sometimes people might come your way that you'll say, you're a strange person. You're a stranger. But in reality, it could very well be that that bush, that stranger, is the Lord reaching out to you, reaching out to me, speaking to you, speaking to me. Matthew, he's just a carpenter. No. It's a ghost. No. You a stranger? No. And finally, in John chapter 20, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, in John 20, on that Easter Sunday morning, Mary, blessed Mary. Mary was there. Mary Magdalene was there, weeping because she went to the tomb and it was empty and she thought someone moved the body. And then she sees a man and she supposes that he is a gardener. And she says, "Gardener, sir, if you have moved the body, tell me where you have taken him and I'll bring him back to the proper place." Mary, who couldn't have weighed more than 100 pounds. Jesus, who probably weighed 200 pounds. How could she do that? Little Mary, dead weight, a corpse. But you see, love finds a way, doesn't it? Love can do amazing things. Be that as it may, she thought he was a gardener, but in reality, it was Jesus himself. And finally, Jesus said her name, Mary. And she recognized the way that he spoke her name that day. And she said, "Rabboni, Master." And she fell at his feet and she threw her arms around him and gave worship to him. But she thought that he was a gardener first. Ah, that gardener that mows your lawns. Ah, that's just the gardener, hired help. That plumber that fixes your pipes. Ah, that's just the plumber. That painter who paints your room. Ah, that's just a painter. Oh, are you sure? It could be that the Lord has sent that bush your way. And the fire is in the bush to speak to you today. To guide me. To reach out toward me. If I will have eyes that see and ears that hear and say, "You're more than a gardener. You're not just a stranger. You're not simply a ghost to spook me. Or you're not some just member of family. I know that in you, the fire of the Lord is burning. The Spirit of the Lord is present. Oh, you might not be on fire, but the fire is in you. And the Lord can use a bush like you, Mr. Plumber. The Lord can use a bush like you, hubby. The Lord can use a bush like you, scary person. The Lord can use a bush like you, stranger. The Lord can use you to speak to me." And suddenly, when I have that kind of mentality, God is now here. He's here speaking, talking. But here's the thing I need to have you see before we go our way tonight. Notice what Moses did. Moses, we are told, yes, the bush, a common bush, an ordinary bush, an unimpressive bush, was used by God, just like God can use me, bush leaguers like us, you see. But when Moses saw that bush burning, it says this, check this out, verse 3. When he saw this bush, he says, "I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt." And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, then God called unto him out of the midst of the bush and said, "Moses, Moses." Moses stopped and said, "Hey, I need to investigate this carefully. I better find out why this bush has fire coming from it, but is not burning up." Hey, Moses could have easily passed by the bush. Why? Because bushes that were on fire in the desert are common. Lightning bolts strike them and they ignite. Nomads burn them to keep warm at night. Burning bushes, it's not a rarity. He could have passed his way and thought, "Ah, that's just lightning." Or, "Ah, that's just some locals that burned the bush and it's still kind of burning," or what have you. He could have walked right by. But the text tells us, look, the text shows us, when the Lord saw, verse 4, that he turned aside to investigate, that's when the Lord spoke to Moses. When he saw that Moses would turn aside and check it out and think it through and ponder a bit, that's when the Lord said, that's it. I'm going to speak to him. You see, here's my problem. Yes, God is now here. The bushes that are around me, the bushes that are linked to me, bushes just like me, he, the flame, the fire is in those bushes. And he'll speak through those bushes to me and to you as well. Problem is, so often we are in such a hurry. We don't take the time to say, maybe my dad has the word of the Lord for me today. Maybe this stranger that I've picked up, this hitchhiker, is being used by God to speak to me in some way. Maybe my son, maybe even though he's only 10, he's got the word of the Lord for me this morning. I better investigate. We're in such a hurry. We don't take the time. And so I'm convinced that we miss many, many things the Lord would say, many directions that he would give, many blessings that he would bestow, because we just go our way. That bush is just that. If we would stop. But do we? Story is told a number of years ago of a man in the Congo. He was there in the village. The natives were suspicious of him. They picked up their spears and they went after him. And this guy, realizing that the natives were after him, ran as fast as he could. He ran for his life. The natives are after him with spears in hand. And he runs until he comes to a cliff. He looks down. It's 60 feet down below. It's a sheer cliff. He looks back. The natives are on their way with spears in hand. And he looks down and he sees there at the bottom of the cliff a whole pride of hungry, roaring, salivating lions. What's he going to do? The spear guys are on the way. The lions are down below. And as they make their way towards him, he finally decides to jump. And he jumps over the ledge. And he grabs on his way down a strawberry vine that happened to be growing on the side of the cliff. He grabs the vine, and the vine holds him. And he holds onto the vine. The lions are roaring below. The spearmen are looking down with spears in their hand. And he's there holding onto this vine. And he sees a strawberry. A strawberry growing on the strawberry vine. And he takes his other hand and grabs that strawberry. And he bites into it. And he says, how delicious. Now, what does that mean? You say, what's that story about? Oh, so often I'm running from the past. Or I'm freaked out about the future. What's ahead? What's below? I'm running from the past, freaked out about what's ahead, that I failed to do what that man did. In that moment, he saw a strawberry. He captured it and was intrigued, satisfied, and blessed because he wasn't freaked out about what was chasing him down at that moment or what lied ahead down below, but he just grabbed the berry right then. And I suggest to you that there's a very real lesson in that, a very important truth in that. Yeah, there's lots of stuff chasing us, and sure, there's problems ahead of us. But in the meantime, there are some wonderful blessings that the Lord wants to bestow upon you and upon me today, right now, in the amphitheater, on the drive home, when we talk tonight with family. There are these berries. The Lord wants to bless you and give sweet things to you. And nourishment for you. He wants to guide and direct you and me. If we'll simply take the time to taste the berry. If we'll simply take the time to check out the bush. The bush. The bush. Lord, do you want to speak to me? Do you want to give direction for me through that common bush that's there? Right next to me. Listen, gang. It's so wonderful, this story. It's so simple. It's so helpful for me. Yeah. God used a bush so He can use you and He can use me. And yes, God is going to use the bush that's sitting next to you, that's married to you, that's working with you. So may you have eyes that see and ears that hear. May you understand that God is now here and He'll speak to us through the bushes that are growing up all around us. Even if they're not on fire, remember, if they're Christians, the fire is in them. And there's illumination, warmth, purification, understanding, all those things that are related to fire that will come from them. The Lord using them, if I'll take the time to investigate and say, okay, Lord, what are you saying to me today, right now, through him, through her, through them? God is now here. I love the story. Yes, God will use bushes like me, and God will use the bushes around me to give direction to me. May the Lord truly give us wisdom. Let's pray, shall we? I wonder, as we're here in this dark amphitheater, if some of us haven't missed Jesus because we think, oh, that's just a family member or just a gardener or a ghost or a stranger. And I wonder if the Lord might not speak to our hearts tonight. And if He might not say to you and me, slow down, listen more carefully, investigate. It's not what you think it is. It's me, He would say. It's me speaking to you today. Don't despise the gardener. Don't look down on the grocery clerk, the trash collector, your geometry teacher, your little toddler. Be careful, because the Lord would say to you today, those are the very bushes that I speak through, the very people that I've sent to you. It's me. If you'll have eyes that see. And precious Applegate family, I do believe that the Lord wants you who feel like you're in the desert to know tonight, it's all right. There's a bush that's burning bright. He is here. He will speak. He shall direct. If you will take the time to investigate, to turn aside and see. Take hope, precious people. Don't lose faith. Don't freak out. Don't give up. The Lord will direct your steps in a most amazing way. And the Lord is going to use you. He's going to use you. No matter how badly you've blown it, no matter how weak you may be, the Lord would say to you, you're the instrument that I can play most impressively. The weak things to confound the strong. The foolish things to confound the wise. If you feel weak tonight or foolish today, good news. You qualify to be used by the Lord in a big time way. Because you know. Because you know. Because you know it's not you. It's God's grace And He alone will get the glory. That's the key. So let Him shine through you. Let Him flow through you. Let Him totally use you. No matter how bushed you might feel, you're just the kind of person that He can use. A one-stringed violin. Let Him have His way. Let Him use you today. In Jesus' name I pray.